Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Talk Sealers podcast. I'm Sybil. Today I'm joined by Jake. Say hello, Jake.
Hi, guys. Welcome back.
I'm also joined by Jed. Say hello, Jed.
Hello, guys.
We're back, boys. Back stronger. We were the first podcast to say that, weren't we? don't let anybody tell you different. Some good news before we start. We have signed for the Sports Social Podcast Network, which we're all super excited about. Big thanks to Jake over at the Sports Social Podcast Network. Not our Jake, as we will refer to as Useless Jake. Sports Social Jake made our process much, much easier than we thought it would be, and it was really painless. So big shout out to him. We'll get more news to bring you. And probably in the next few days, would we say, well, keeping under wraps, we've got a big sponsor, a great discount to go to bring you very, very soon. We're really, really excited about it. But we'll go straight to Man City West Ham, and I'll get your thoughts on this, boys. I mean, following the absolute love letters that Pep Guardiola and David Moyes wrote to each other in the pre-match press conferences, it's absolutely laughable. What was your point? What was your thoughts on this match, Jed?
Does David Moyes want a West Ham version of Pep's jacket from the other night?
I don't know if he'd sit it, to be honest.
I reckon he would. I reckon he could pull it off. I'm not surprised by the result today. From the weekend, from this game, I thought West Ham gave it a good go, to their credit.
I was going to say, I thought West Ham were absolutely terrific, man. Yeah, Some of the chances they created were absolutely superb.
Like I said,
just begging to be put away.
Yeah, they played really well. But as I say, I'm not surprised by the outcome and that City got the 3 points in the end. It's what they do, isn't it? It's what they've been doing now for weeks. West Ham, like you say, carved out some really good chances, gave it a really good go. And that's credit to how good they've been this season. But I don't think they will have been expecting to go there and take anything off City. So I think it's one of them. It's just, we'll go there, we'll see what we can do, move on.
Yeah. Man City's forward line not firing quite as well as it was in the past, I don't know, 19-20 wins that they've had now. those pesky centre-backs, Stones and Diaz, both putting goals away.
Jake, John Stones what was your... well, though.
John Stones was a terrific goal. He placed it really, really well. Jake, what were your thoughts in the match?
Yeah, I thought, like you said, lads, West Ham gave it a good go, didn't they? I thought they, at one point, until Stones' goal, I thought they deserved the point, and then sort of killed the game and City took over from there. But I did like the love letters that were being written, like Guardiola, Heston Blumenthal. It's quite a good link between the two, to be honest. Both bold.
bold move from Moyes.
Yeah, unbelievable. But no, credit to West Ham. They gave it a go. They'll be happy that Jesse Lingard's getting assists as well as goals. So he's still contributing. And yeah, like you said, Jed, I thought John Stones took his goal superbly. I mean, it was a centre-forward's finish from a not pretty old-fashioned centre-back, wasn't it, really?
It was, yeah. It's a very calm finish for a centre-back. I think that's testament to Manchester City in general, isn't it? I think any other centre-back panics in that position. but for John Stones, he's like, oh, it's just another pass. Just pass it into the net.
Making an effort, making a point of getting in the box these days, John Stones and Ruben Diaz, and staying up after set pieces as well, which is obviously ultimately how Ruben Diaz scores his goal. If you'd asked us, I think the three of us can agree, if you asked us about John Stones 6 or 7 months ago, we would have probably told you that it'd be likely that Stones would be looking for a move away in the January window or the summer window. But he's absolutely turned it around, and we're seeing the reason why Man City signed John Stones. He's been absolutely terrific, and he's surely, I don't know, I'm not English, so I'm not going to nail this down, but if I was, I would 100% want John Stones to be a staple in that Euro squad.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, considering the lack of depth there is at centre-half as well for England, compared to the rest of the pitch, like his resurgence and his form this season, he's one of the first names on the team sheet, isn't he? He has to be. I mean, if he's one of the first names on Man City's team sheet, you know, he's got to be one of the first names on England's team sheet. It just has to happen.
Yeah, his form's been great since he's come back into the side as well. And it's not only like his sort of passing ability, but defensively, he looks like he's improved as well. I know that was one of the real criticisms that people were having, was that defensively he was a bit sloppy, but he seems to have, you know, whatever he's been doing in the few months that he's not been playing, it's obviously worked. So fair play to him for sticking it out and getting back into the side as well. Because it's no easy feat getting back into a Man City team when you've effectively been binned, because that's pretty much what happened, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like, Pep was like, no, done with you. Injuries made his way back in and he's not looked back since. And
there was a period where midfielders were getting picked over.
Exactly.
Ahead of him at centre-back.
Yeah.
By the way, he's just absolutely cheeky bastards to talk about fucking lack of depth at centre-back. You know, we've got to play Scott McTominay there. Otherwise, our only option's Charlie Mulgrew.
I forgot that there were some of the irrelevant country that qualified for the Euros.
Mate, honestly, Golly McBurney at centre back.
You know,
we'll speak after this.
Yeah, McBurney would do a better job for you. Just head the ball away.
Do you know what? Moving on. Before I get upset, we go to one of the strangest matches of this match week. West Brom, Big Sam did the Big Sam, scored early, shut out. Or all Brighton. I can't determine whether I feel bad for Brighton or not. I don't understand my feelings about this match. Part of me thinks Brighton, oh, this is something terrible that's happened to you. You know, he's played so well and he's haven't got the result. The other half of me is like, how did you not win this game?
I mean,
idiots.
I fully agree with you, Simo. I'm in exactly the same boat, because like, yes, they had the farcical free kick situation. They also had two penalties, like, and they hit the woodwork both times. Like,
first time in Premier League history any team has hit the woodwork with two penalties in one match.
Well done, well done, Brighton. That's the only thing they're taking from that game, isn't it? Like, it's so bizarre, isn't it? Because it's like, it's exactly like you put it. It's like, oh, they've been really hard done by in one part of the game, and then the rest of it, they've just ballsed it up themselves. Like,
yeah. There's a certain point where you cannot feel sorry for them, because they absolutely should have put away those chances. I mean, you've got a bit of the penalties at least. I mean, do you know, Graham Potter handled the post match pretty well for me. If that was me, I would have been a broken man. Like, if that had happened to me on Football Manager, same I would assistant. Have been like, you know, inconsolable. Sorry, boys, can't do the pod today. Something really terrible's happened. What were your thoughts on the match, Jake?
See, I felt sorry for Brighton all season. I thought they've been really unlucky. And I've been like, yeah, you play really good football. But, I mean, at the weekend, it was their own fault. Like, two penalties, you're going to score one of them. Do you know what I mean? The law of averages says you're going to bag one of them. And the first one, it's a pretty decent penalty.
It's just the run-up.
And, you know, we're going back to something we're speaking about in, like, episode 2 or 3, about this jittery run-up that we despise. Just smash it and it's in. And he didn't. And then Welbeck, I mean, it's Danny Welbeck, isn't it? He's the nearly man.
I'd put more money on
Welbeck hitting the post and scoring the penalty. But like,
yeah.
There's no excuse for the first one though. Just stop.
Oh, how dare you speak about that way, Danny. Also, I don't know if we should dive too deep into this, because we did have a big VAR rant. Was it last Premier League show we had a big VAR rant? But Lee Mason, oh my days.
Funny old thing as well is he's pulled his calf now, hasn't he? Supposedly.
Yeah.
Which is, you know...
It's entirely possible.
Pulled his calf right off his fucking body.
I feel like...
There's nothing suspicious about Graham that at all. I don't know what you're on about.
Graham Potter's probably pulled his car for him, I think. But I do want to quickly talk about the free kick incident. What were your thoughts? Because for me, if you're blowing the whistle saying that you're happy with everything and you're letting the lads take it, you've got to stick by that.
Bang on.
Because he's blown the whistle and he said, I'm happy with the positioning of everybody. Yeah. The keeper, that's not his fault. He's on the post sorting out his wall. If the ref says he's ready, the keeper's got to be alert to it. You know, fair play. Lewis Dunk, I mean, for a centre-back, that's a wonderful finish. Really lovely.
Basically, yeah, he had to play really well.
Well, yeah, but it's the ingenuity.
Don't take it away from Lewis.
Sorry, Lewis.
But especially how hard we've been on him.
Yeah, no, I think...
Considered the
think Lee Mason's, he's bottled a big decision. He should have let the goal stand. He give it...
You blow the whistle.
It's
fair game.
And we've seen Thierry Henry do that, or Thierry Henry. Exactly. In recent times, he made it quite famous. I think he scored two of them.
Yeah.
One of them more famous than the other. I cannot recall the second one, but I'm sure he did that multiple times. For me, the bottling of it is like, right, if you've blown the whistle and you've made a poor decision and it's a goal, right, fair play, you take it on the chin, right? The West Brom players are going to be, they're going to be upset. They're going to give you it rotten, and Big Sam's going to give you it rotten in the post-match as well. 100%, right? But what you can't do, right, is blow your whistle and then blow it just as the ball is crossing the line. And then give the goal, then take the goal. Not give the goal. And just make a big farce of everything. And it's not just that one goal, but by doing what he did, right, you create there's already a big mistrust of VAR. Fans do not trust VAR. Fans do not like VAR. All the polls say it. We've ran polls. Sky Sports have ran polls. BBC have ran polls. Everybody's ran polls on VAR. The general opinion is that between 70% and 80% of fans don't like VAR. Right. And by making decisions like that and making VAR interfere in it, you're just causing this big mistrust, and it's just not good enough for Lee Mason. And I know he's refed X amount of games, and he is, you know, I think he was due to do the Liverpool game after that, actually.
Yeah.
So he's obviously held in high regard by his peers, but he's just had one of those days where he's absolutely ballsed up, and it all happened in a period of about 3 seconds. You know,
I don't think honestly on this one, I don't think that it's VAR's fault. I think it's more Lee Mason's fault for blowing the whistle.
It's Lee Mason's fault.
It's Lee Mason's fault, but as soon as you involve VAR, everybody gets upset.
Of course, that made it worse when he's given it and then not given it, etc. But like, if you're like we said, boys, if you're blowing the whistle, you're happy for that free kick to be taken. If you're not actually happy for that free kick to be taken, don't blow the whistle. And then certainly don't blow it again before the ball's hit the back of the net. Because if you have to rule the goal out, at least let the goal go in. Like him blowing the whistle again is what stopped VAR from being able to give the goal, as far as I'm aware. Like, because he's blown, because it was after the whistle.
So it's because
he blows it the second time. He's doubly fucked it up there. Like, it's just that it's more down to him than VAR, I think, because VAR have just gone, they've followed their protocol, as flawed as it might be, they've followed it. And he's the one that's caused the issue. Now, like, fair enough, he's only human, like, but that is a massive error. Yeah. And that could potentially be that goal not standing.
So,
given where Brighton are, in, you know, that could potentially be big for them. And that's, it's harsh. Oh, yes, in the rest of the game, they didn't take their chances. So they probably didn't deserve to win the game anyway, but certainly could have, you know, can feel hard done by not to have a point. They should have had a draw at least out of that game. Like, and that's a difference. That point makes a big difference.
100%.
On the flip side of that, what a slice of luck for West Brom that they've come away with 3 points from that game. I mean, like, Big Sam, he'll have been dancing in the changing room after that. Like, that's Big Sam written all over it, hasn't it? Like you say, early goal, shut up shop. All the luck's gone their way with the penalties and everything. Fair play to them. Fair play for him to riding it out. Yeah, it's a classic Big Sam performance. It's just like the free kicks is madness. I think that's kind of overshadowed the game, really.
Yeah, definitely.
It was the main talking definitely. Point. I didn't want to dive into it too deep, but now we've just spent about 5 minutes
talking about it. Well, mate, what sort of Premier League review would this be if we didn't talk about it, to be fair?
Listeners, I swear to God, before the match, we're like, let's try and keep it VAR light. And as soon as we get in here, we're like, VAR! Oh, we really just can't help ourselves. TalkScreamers, Billy's, Aston Villa got a win against Leeds away from home, and they're on gaff. Quite a fortunate win, if you ask me. What were your thoughts on the match, Jake?
The Ellen Road pitch sums up Leeds' season. Like, it's dodgy. It's dodgy, isn't it? Like, it's just horrendous.
Hideous pitch.
Yeah, the pitch is awful. Like, that's like the one thing I took away from this game was watching it. I just thought, this is non-league all over it. Like. But no, fair play, like, Villa to grind the win out. A big win, winning at Ellen Road. Yeah, I mean, I didn't actually watch the game, to be honest. I only caught the highlights, so I saw what sort of match of the day wanted me to see. But fair play, like, Villa are showing that they're not a one-man band. Grealish being out, other people are starting to step up, getting a nice win. So, yeah, I think Dean Smith will be very happy with the 3 points there.
That was a big thing for me. Can you do the business with Jackie Grealish? I mean, they did not play well, Villa. But then again, is it really possible to play well on a pitch like that? Like, play silky football on a pitch like that? I think you put Man City on that pitch and they don't play the silkiest football ever. You know?
Exactly.
People are like, oh, it's just a pitch, don't complain about it. I was like, well, it's only Leeds. Like, there's 19 other teams in the division that have managed to maintain the pitch.
Yeah, it's a problem, isn't it? I don't understand where it's going so wrong for them in terms of groundskeeping. But, like, I watched this game and I did think that Villa, to their credit, they defended.
They've got to get Lewis Stone casting for the groundskeeper to come out to their post match.
Imagine that.
Sorry, Jed. I didn't mean that joke.
Oh, no, that I'd love to see. That'd be class. You got VAR reviewing the like, forking of the pitch before the game. Oh, yeah.
He's missed the fork there.
Oh, I know. The sprinklers have been on too long. I thought that Villa, they did protect their lead to some extent. They weren't brilliant, but obviously they were missing Jack Grealish. And they frustrated Leeds. I think Leeds just found it difficult to break through, which, for all the possession and the attacks that they had, if you can't put the ball in the net, like, you're not going to win, are you? And that's, I think Martinez made a couple of good saves, as he normally does. Like you say, he loves a clean sheet, that lad. I'm not, like, having seen, the game and seen Villa go 1-0 up, I didn't think that Leeds would have been able to sort of turn it around watching it. I think that the best they could have hoped for was a draw, and obviously Villa kept them out. So credit to them. One thing that I did love about this was at the end, the Leeds keeper, Melier, went up for a corner. And went straight on to Martinez and marked him. Like, I just think that's brilliant. Like, it doesn't often happen when keepers go up for corners. They're sort of around the penalty spot, aren't they? And he's like straight on him with his arms up in the air as well. Absolutely brilliant. Like, that did make me chuckle. I think that was probably the highlight of the game for me.
Oh, that is absolutely cracking. For me, Leeds are a team that move the ball across the floor. I don't understand why they're not heavily trying to sort their pitch issues. For me, I mean, outside the centre backs and Patrick Bamford, they don't have really any height in that team at all.
No.
The majority of the team is tiny.
Do you reckon it?
Yeah, they're tiny, absolutely. So surely they want to be moving the ball across the floor, and favourably, it makes sense to have a silky pitch to play on. So they're kind of.
He's going, I reckon it'll make it more difficult for visiting teams if we don't get the pitch fixed that much.
It's hindering his side now, though.
It is, yeah. I mean, it wouldn't. Yeah, obviously, like, it's backfiring on him. But do you reckon he's had any say in that?
Potentially. I don't think so. He's the dude that fucking let the opposition score against him because he wasn't happy with a goal. You know, so like, I don't feel like he's out there getting fucking sabotaged. Oh, yeah,
he's
like,
a weird guy, though, isn't he?
He's a weird guy, isn't he?
Like, I remember Charlie Adam was speaking about playing at Stoke, and if they had like a team that was good at moving the ball across the floor at the weekend, they'd do like a 2-hour training hour just in the centre of the pitch. like the stadium the day before.
That's great. I love that. I love that type of shithousery. That's class.
Yeah.
That's Pulis all over though, isn't it?
It probably was, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, right, lads, churn up the pitch.
Make sure you got your long...
Everybody get your mail studs out.
It's like, Tony, it's the middle of June.
Oh, dearie me. We next go to Sports Direct United took on Wolves and managed to get the draw. Yeah. Sports Direct United take on Portugal and get the draw. An interesting game, this, for me. For me, Newcastle started really, really well and looked dangerous. And I think the Lascelles goal was really well. I actually thought it was Joe Linton that scored the Lascelles goal because I was kind of watching this with one eye on the game, one eye on my phone, as I do many times when I watch Newcastle. And I was like, oh my God, Joe Linton's got himself into a good position there and scored a header. Oh no, it's not him. And then I was like, where was Joe Linton then? And then the ball comes out and I think it's like Ryan Fraser picks up the ball and then Joe Linton like exits the box. It's like, what are you doing?
He just knows. He's like, if it drops to me, it's not going in. I'll get out. I'm not getting involved.
I'll get ridiculed for missing another chance.
Actively seeks to get outside the box.
He had a shot on target in the game at one point, didn't he? Joe Linton. I think
did he
did.
Newcastle were terrific. They had 19 attempts at goal. I think that might be... I've got to go out on a whim and say that's their most all season in a single match. 19 attempts on 7 of them on target. Definitely good value for money in this match, Newcastle, considering the obvious of missing Callum Wilson, who's a big attacking outlet for them. Wolves were defensively poor for the first half. But then kind of picked up in the second half. Heavily dominant in the second half for me. Wolves are... I don't know what we need to do to refine that form last season. It's virtually the same team, virtually minus Raul, obviously. What are your thoughts, Jake? But how do Wolves turn this around?
They need a goal scorer to replace Jota, because they didn't really replace him when he got sold. I mean, they got Fabio Silva in, but I mean, he's very, very young, very inexperienced, and playing.
You've been an outside Jimenez.
Yeah. I mean, who have they got really? Jimenez obviously is out. Big injury I thought in January they definitely have delved into the market for a striker, because that's what they've been lacking all season, is someone to put the ball in the back of the net. And we saw it again at the weekend. They didn't really create that much, and when they did, I mean, Silva, to be fair to him, to Bravka, pulled off a brilliant save in, I think it was like added time.
But if
that's Jimenez, you think it's probably going to bag that. Jota probably going to score it, so don't know whether it's a confidence thing or just, you know, inexperience. But they do need a goal scorer. They definitely need a goal scorer for me in the summer. And I can probably, to be honest, see like Ruben Neves moving on as well, because he can't be happy sitting around at 12th place.
What
Wolves
talent.
Very good.
Exactly.
Very good.
I mean, he's an unbelievable player. Yeah. He could quite easily play in any of the top four teams.
If I was a Jose Mourinho, I would be thinking, you know, Højbjerg, Deves, and then Ndombele in that midfield, and that would be excellent for me if I was Jose. But I think Wolves would demand the money, given Ruben Neves' young age and his potential and his experience he's already accumulated at this young age. I think Wolves would be demanding the bag for it. So you're probably looking at more of a Man City, Man United.
It'd be quite a big transfer if that one went through, because obviously how good he is. Like you say, his age, just the market in general these days. I think Jake's hit the nail on the head in summing up Wolves' season with the words Jimenez would have bagged that. Like pretty much every chance that falls to Fabio Silva, you know, Raul Jimenez would have scored that. Like it's just that's just the way it's been, and it's really unfortunate, obviously, what happened to him. It's good to see him back in training now, light training, I think. But for Wolves, I think the end of this season can't come quick enough. Like just they need to get it out of the way, get the summer, you know, get in pre-season and start again next year, because like this is just the season's a write off. They're not going to go down. Yeah. They're not going to finish in the top half. They're going to be solid in mid table. Like it's just that's it. Get it over with.
They are making the right moves for me to establish themselves as a Premier League side. Mainly they're not losing many of their important players. Obviously, Jota, they couldn't keep a hold of. They weren't. Jota wasn't. It wasn't blinding for Wolves. No. It was definitely like not the main man at the time. For me, I don't think any of the blame can be laid at Fabio Silva's feet.
No, definitely not.
None of that can be laid at definitely Fabio Silva's feet. Just because he has a young, he's a prospect. They spent big money on him, yes. Not with the intention for him to come straight into the first 11. I think the idea was for Fabio Silva to come on mainly 30, 40 minutes to go, sometimes 20, and then start the odd game as well. You know, Newcastle at home, start that game.
100% agree about that. Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Well, like you say, he definitely wasn't intended to get this much football, and it's not, you know, it's not his fault at all. Firmly believe that, but like you say, and he just doesn't have the experience to be able to capitalise on the chances that he's getting at the minute, and that's where they've fallen short, I think, for me.
I think he needs to get on Adama Traore's weight programme as well, to be honest. Like.
Well, just Wales running around with just loads of hench blokes.
But quickly before we move on, I just want to talk about Newcastle. I think, to be honest, I think they're in absolute jeopardy. I think they're in real serious bother. They're, you know, if Fulham, you know, are 2 points behind them. Callum Wilson's out, Almiron's out now, and so's Alan Saint-Maximin.
Who was excellent in this game.
I'm looking at that now and I'm thinking Joel Linton is the only man who can potentially
what are they going to do?
Get you a goal.
Joel Linton's going to keep Newcastle up now that you've said that. Joel Linton's going to score the goal that keeps him in the division. They've got Andy Carroll, to be fair. They've got Andy Carroll.
Yeah, it's going to be
Wheat a bit legs.
Dwight Gayle, Andy Carroll up front, Ryan Fraser on the wing, and try to think who else could they could bang on that. I mean, not that Newcastle sort of bang people on the wing.
That's a championship. Honestly, mate. The names you've just named there, though, that's just championship written all over it.
Honestly, it's like Fulham have improved so much and closed the gap where Newcastle have just have just capitulated, haven't they? Like, yeah, they've played better recently, like, but now these injuries have gone there, you know, gone against them as well. It's like, I'm backing Fulham to survive at this point over Newcastle. I don't think West Brom and Sheffield United have any hope. Sheffield United, definitely not. West Brom, the gap's just too big, I think, with the way they're playing. Although if they get a few more slices of luck like they had against Brighton, then you never know. But at this moment in time, I think Newcastle are in real, real danger. I'd agree with you, Jake.
Fulham and West Brom will be absolutely seething with Nuno, that he couldn't put Newcastle to the sword today because it would have made their jobs a lot easier. We next go to Crystal Palace, Fulham. Fulham played absolutely exceptional in this game. Limited the mighty Crystal Palace to just three shots. I don't know how they did it in this game. I'm watching the highlights are very favourable on Fulham's point, and you just think, put the ball in it. Oh, Jesus Christ. They're really not going to get anything to eat. Oh, wow.
It's one of them, isn't it? Like,
it was my circus of emotions when I was watching that.
Exactly the same as you, mate. I only watched the highlights because I watched the other game at the same time that day, Leicester-Arsenal. But every highlight was a Fulham highlight, and every highlight seemed to involve, was it Anderson, his name? Like, every chance was dropping to him in the box.
Yeah.
It's like, what did they have to do to score in that game? I think they did everything they could. Obviously, what's his name? Goita's quite a good keeper. He made a few decent saves. That was all Palace really had going for them, from what I've seen. And it's as good as Fulham were, though. It still doesn't surprise me that they've drawn, because that's just what they do.
That was
better than losing.
Exactly, yeah.
Better than losing.
It is.
That's what I was going to say, Jed. If any game had 0-0 written all over it, it was Crystal Palace. But like you say, Simo, you know, it's better than losing. The confidence doesn't drop as much with the draw. A point, still a point. They've clawing that gap to Newcastle, and every single time they're doing that. And yeah, I think, to be honest, if they keep playing the way they're playing, they're going to be safe. But their next three games on paper are disgusting. Yeah. Well, Tottenham, Liverpool, Man City. I mean,
the thing is, though, they're playing well, so it's not like they're scraping these draws. They are playing well, and they're deserving a draw at least from these games.
I completely agree with you there, Jed, because this is the first time for me that Fulham have properly dominated a team for 90 minutes, the entirety of a game. So important for them. They even managed to, you know, they've got to look at this and think Crystal Palace are above us, but we're a better side than them now. We're a more complete side than them now. And you must believe. You're in that dressing room. You must believe. You must believe that you can catch Newcastle.
100%. Surely. 100%. I'm dead certain that Scott Parker's going, look at them. Look how bad they are. Look how well we've done recently. keep it up, like, we are going to pull this off. Like, there can't be any other mindset like at Fulham at the minute. And I think now that he's brought in Josh Madger as well, like, he's got the potential to get the goals they need if the chances drop to him.
He looks confident, doesn't he?
Yeah, and it's really, like I say, they deserve to get things out of games when they're playing this well. It's a shame it's taken them so long to sort of grow into the season, really, isn't it? But, like, you know, credit to them, because, you know, a lot of people have written them off at the beginning of the year. I didn't think they'd have enough to stay up, personally. I'm happy to have been proven wrong. I think I'm firmly in the other camp now. I think Fulham are playing really well. It's definitely going to be interesting to see what happens, because you never know. Steve Bruce might pull out a masterclass and keep Newcastle up. He might get the best out of Joe Linton and go on a scoring spree.
I am skeptical. We next go to a game that I watched in an airport. Leicester, Arsenal. Leicester started ever so well. And then Arsenal really, really came into the game. Seems Arsenal, one of the teams that can't seem to find a gear unless they go down. And then they find that next gear. And then, you know, and for me, just blew away Leicester. Really, really, their passing, their one-touch passing is great. Some might say Man City-esque in certain departments. For very, very specific departments. Definitely not over the 90 minutes. But we've seen good things from Pepe and Willie in this game, which we don't normally see too often. What were your thoughts, Jake?
I thought the first, like, 10 minutes, I thought, oh, it's going to be a long day for Arsenal, especially when Tielemans... You know, he took a really good goal, but Arsenal's defending was
dire,
dreadful,
wasn't it, on that goal?
Oh, it was so bad. And when that went in, I was like, wow, this is going to be a thumping. Like, this is going to be bad.
It's a bold move to play David Luiz in a back two, isn't it?
But, you know, after, to be honest, after, like you say, Simo, they went goal behind. And as I was watching this one, they grew into the game so much. And I thought Nicolas Pepe had probably one of his best performances in an Arsenal shirt. He was really good, looked really dangerous up and down the flank. Tierney played really well as well. I mean, to be fair, Arsenal caused Leicester problems. Losing Harvey Barnes early in the second half, I mean, that's a massive blow for any side. And Leicester are getting a lot of injury concerns at the minute. And losing him and James Maddison isn't great. especially towards this latter end of the season where you need all your key players fit. It's, you know, Leicester could potentially be in for a bit of a struggle, but they've still got the quality in there to make the difference. But they were just out.
It's pointed out in Match of the Day that Leicester had the same points tally at this point last season, and we all thought they were going to challenge for that top four. And it seems a similar picture to me, picking up injuries, form dropping off.
Yeah, last season was a different case, though, wasn't it, with the football stopping at this time of year and then coming back, you know, when it did. But it is weirdly similar, isn't it, to be fair, like you say, Simo.
Eerily similar, I think.
Yeah, it is, but we all know they've still got the quality to be able to go on and finish in the top four, though. That's a given. And on their day, you know, they can beat anyone. Obviously, they do rely on the likes of Barnes and Maddison to some extent, but you've still got Jamie Vardy in the team, and, you know, he'll get goals when he gets chances. And I thought that Arsenal outclassed them, though, for the majority of the game. After the goal went in, they woke up and they were the better team in the first half overall, and then the second half, Leicester just never really got in it. Pepe, like I said, had a really, really good game.
Yeah.
It's not like him. Mm. But he played really well. I think he's actually, he has improved of late. I don't know whether that's been because he got dropped and, you know, people like Saka have done so well. Potentially that's given him a kick up the arse. But yeah, he played really well, and Arsenal deserved the 3 points. I did want to talk about the penalty that Leicester gave away, though, with Ndidi. Mm. Like, it was just a silly handball. I don't understand why he's got his arms up by his face.
Why his arms are so high?
Yeah, it was just daft. And it, like, if you want to finish in the top four this year...
He's trying, like, to get his leg as high as his arms.
It's so bizarre. Like, so if you want to finish in the top four this year, don't do that. I can't put it any other way. Like, don't put your hands up. In the box. In an unnatural position. What could you possibly need to do with them up there? Like,
good save,
though. I think it's fair to say that in the penalty box, your arms should not be above your head. Just don't put your arms above your head. There's no YMCA in the penalty box. You know, do it in ordinary pitch, by all means. And do you know what? Like, indeed, if you have to put your leg up that high, like, by the time his leg is at full stretch, his boot is higher than his head. If you have to put your boot up that high, chances are the ball's going
over.
Not
even that, like, it wasn't...
it's
wasn't,
a screamer, and you're not stopping
far
it.
Above head height. Like, if he'd...
No. Oh, he was like going back at himself and, like, fucking
it's
slinging
just,
a boot
yeah,
on.
It's weird. It's weird. It's like...
a shot.
If I was Brendan Rodgers, I'd be absolutely fuming with him. I'd be like, Arsenal had played their way back into the game at that point, and they had had a penalty decision not go their way. It was given as a free kick, like on the edge of the box, which is really like tight call. And it's like, and that was Pepe as well running through. And it's like they're putting us under a lot of pressure. You just don't want to do anything silly before half time. Get into half time with 1-0 up, and it might have been 1-1 at that point actually. But you know, they were still in the game, I think, Leicester at that point. And after that, like that's a massive turning point for Arsenal to have turned it round going half time leading. So like, I'd be fuming if I was Brendan Rodgers, because it's such a stupid thing. It's like so avoidable. Like,
it was like 45 plus three or something that gave the penalty.
Yeah, them, so they tailed out to 39 minutes. David Luiz with his great header, utilising David Luiz on set pieces. I'm absolutely for that. Obviously, David, once upon a time, people, there's a bit of recency bias in this. David Luiz has always been a terrible player. He was fucking blinding on his day on set pieces and on free kicks. And utilising David Luiz on a set piece is obviously very, very clever. But they did hold out for 39 minutes. And I'm sure Brendan Rodgers would be absolutely seething at this, because he's probably got his notes ready at half time.
Yeah.
For either to hold out for the draw or try and get back into the game. And then next thing you know, instead of one each, you know, you're 2-1 down, you give yourself a bit of a mountain to climb. And then in the second half, Arsenal start well, and then you can just kind of tell the tone is set. Yeah. You know, the tone is set that it's not going to be Leicester's day. And lo and behold, Nicolas Pepe goes on and seals the deal at 52 minutes. Arsenal, if they could play that. Well, they came into the game, what, about 10, 15 minutes in? If they could play that 75 minutes every game, they'd be top four.
They'd beat a lot of sides with that, yeah.
They would beat a lot of sides. Some of the ways they move the ball is absolutely terrific. I thought Willian was, you know, for the first, well, maybe since the opening of the season, first time he's played a really, really class performance for me. You've seen bits that you'd normally see at Chelsea in his day, which is positive for Arsenal because they are paying Willian a lot of money for a couple of years now.
He's not getting any younger either, is he?
He's not. They need to find a way to utilise him. And using him in a game against Leicester, who are a good side, and getting something out of him is positive signs for Arsenal fans, in my opinion. Utilising David Luiz, who didn't look terrible for me in a back two for the first time in a long, long time for me, is good news as well. But let's hope it's not a false dawn for them, because we've seen this from Arsenal before. You know, a great match followed by, you know, terrible performances. We go next to Spurs, 4-0. Against Burnley, the Gareth Bale show. Gareth Bale, for me, was full of swagger. That first one.
Gareth's back, isn't he?
He knows it's in before it even leaves his boot.
Yeah, do you know what, mate? I watched this game, and I'd just made a cup of tea and I settled down. And then I sort of turned away and he was like, oh, Bale scored. And I was like, all right. So this is going to be the tone of this game, is it?
I think he's playing. He played like a man who's just heard that golf courses are opening up again soon.
Yeah, that left.
It was the Bale show, really, wasn't it? I thought Son, Kane, and Bale, they all played
Son
really
was
well.
Good.
Burnley just never recovered after the first goal went in. Really, like, they just couldn't get in the game. It was a bad day for Sean Dyche, fan of the pod.
Big fan of the pod, Sean Dyche.
Sorry, Sean. We still love you,
how
mate.
How you doing, Sean? I thought Spurs were absolutely terrific. I mean, they looked so dangerous at every moment. Harry Kane scored a very, very Harry Kane goal as well. He just hits it in a way that if you'd blacked out the player, I would have been like, yeah, that's Harry Kane, that. Who's hit
it's that,
that shot.
Left channel, opening the body up and...
Yeah, just left channel, you know, it's absolutely superb. Lucas Moura as well got on the score sheet. Gareth Bale, you know, gets an assist as well, and he's getting fitter, and he's looked great in the Europa in more than one match this season. So I think Josie's going to start trusting him soon after a match like that. Surely you make your manager's mind up for
definitely.
Him. You know,
Gareth Bale is still a world class player. You know what I mean? He's still a world class talent. He proved that again at the weekend. I know it was only Burnley, but it's the positions he's getting into. It's the way he's moving the ball. He looks hungry again. And I think it's only good signs for Tottenham. And if he plays like this till the rest of the season, then we could potentially see them fly up that pitch, because he's a, you know, they've got 3-4 potential game-winning players in that side now. Bale, Kane, Son, Moura. I mean, that's a dangerous front four. Dele Alli, if he wants to play. And Ndombele, you know, that's dangerous for any side.
Roy Keane was heavily critical of Dele Alli.
Roy Keane's critical of everybody.
Did you see the old argument.
And then he's like, oh, the full-back line's terrible. And then Jamie Redknapp
wanted to go, didn't he?
Jamie Redknapp was like, oh, Redknapp's a good player. And then Roy responded. Reguilón's a good player. And Roy went, oh, what about Alderweireld? And then went, what about Reguilón? And he went, yeah.
To be fair, I can see where Roy's coming from with, like, the only one I saw when he was about Reguilón, and he was like, you know, Jamie Redknapp was like, oh yeah, but he was at Real Madrid, and he was like, yeah, but Real Madrid got rid of him for a reason. They got rid of Bale for a reason. And I was like, that's a fair point, but they've both played really well at Tottenham, so.
You can't say Reguilón's not a good player. He's a good player.
He was key in that Man City win. Key in that Man City win. He ran so, so well. I think it's ludicrous to say that Reguilón's not a good player. You know, just because you're all of a sudden not playing for Real Madrid does not mean you're a bad footballer.
Exactly.
Definitely not.
If you found yourself at Real Madrid at some point in your career, it generally means you can play football to some extent. I think he was in a grump for some reason. Maybe someone left him a bad...
Do you know what? The thing I sometimes find with Roy Keane is that he doesn't... I feel like he just says things now to be controversial. He's like Piers Morgan. He just says things because he knows people are going to be like, oh, that's bullshit. Like, I don't think he believes half the things he says. I can't see him believing it because some of his opinions...
But Chris Sutton goes so far out there.
That he's bullshit.
There's no doubt in your mind that Chris... He does not believe that. Yeah. If he does, then he needs to be committed to some sort of hospital. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like Chris Sutton's the type that'll turn around and say, oh, Harry Kane shouldn't play for England. And you're like,
really? Exactly.
Like, why? And he's like, oh, he's not mobile enough. It's like, really? Like, get a grip. It's fucking Harry Kane. He's going to start for any nation.
Spurs terrific. I know we've not spoke too much about Burnley.
There's not much to say about them, really, is there?
They were bad. They weren't that at all. Sean Dyche was it the post match that he said he'd let Nick Pope go for, like, if they got the pubs open or something? Sean Dyche is just written off post match press conferences.
He's having a laugh with it
he's
now.
He's just
ain't
like,
he?
What are they going to do? Fucking sack me. Yeah. They're going to sack me. I'm fucking Sean Dyche.
Sean Dyche is a Burnley legend.
He's just going to come and manage Burnley.
He's a Burnley legend. He's never going to lose that job.
I'll let him go for a pint of lager and a packet of crisps at this point.
I'm really surprised he didn't say Paul Scratchings.
Yeah. Yeah.
What type of...
Sean, could you just be serious for a second?
What type of crisp do you think Sean Dyche eats?
McCoy's.
I think Sean Dyche's diet is exclusively... Port Scratchings, and that's why
I think if he has to, he goes for McCoy's, you know, but like salt and vinegar McCoy's. Yeah,
I put him down as like a flaming steak.
I can see him going, I'm parched up to a monster munch, you know. That's probably going to come up in his next interview.
Yeah.
Why did we pay that impressionist? I mean, why did we get Sean Dyche to do that? Do that intro when we get such a good.
the bigger question is, what do you reckon he drinks if he's down the pub? What's he having a pint?
Stout.
A big glass of razor blades.
No, I think he drinks. I think he's a Stella man.
Yeah,
he drinks a Stella.
I think he has. I think he has a pint of Carling, but a Guinness every now and then. Oh. Mix it up
with a Guinness. I don't think he's common enough for a Guinness. A Carling. I don't think he drinks a Carling.
I was going to say, what, an old portrait than a man drinking Guinness.
I'd love to see Sean Dyche with like a fancy gin or something.
What, a glass of red wine or something? No. That's all kinds of wrong.
Lager.
Yeah. Can of super outside the shop.
Strongbow in the summer.
Red stripe.
Why are we slating Sean Dyche?
He's our god. He's our god.
We just want to go for a pipe. We're just speculating what to buy him when we finally do get to meet him. Yeah.
When we get him on the podcast. Because
obviously we're going to give him a gift, a crate of something.
Yeah. We're just reflecting all our insecurities on him, you know, just because we are stood out the shop with a canister for just this. Right, we go next to Chelsea Man United. It was 0-0. Moving on.
Oh, hang on. No, there's one talking point from this game.
It was really boring.
Then, there's one talking point. Handball in the box.
Oh, yeah. That.
That's the only talking point.
Yeah, I think it was handball.
Solskjaer seems to think it's fair, don't we?
Like, I think they've justified it by saying that it came off Greenwood first.
Mm.
But I can't work out where it came off Greenwood first. It's really weird. I think it should have been a penalty, to be honest.
I thought it was a penalty, personally. But other than that, this game was... I turned off after 20 minutes. I couldn't watch it. It was dreadful. It was dreadful. It was so bad.
I was travelling at the time, and I was like...
You were lucky. You were the lucky one. Really?
God. Yeah, I was listening on the radio a wee bit, and then I just turned it off. I mean, come on. Sorry, I should not swear. We're well aware that the explicit tags that we're getting on Spotify are...
It's because of you. It's only because of you. Yeah, mainly me, really.
I am over Big Six no-nos. Yeah, I am so over Big Six no-nos. I have lost any hope for any Big Six fixture at this point. I mean, that was such a dreadful affair. Why are we bothering, lads, putting £1 billion worth of football players on the pitch to see them just move around each other so passively.
Have you noticed how Sky Sports, you know how they do like the montages and stuff before the game of all like the highlights from the classic games? Have you noticed how none of them, are from like the last 5-6 years or so? Like, probably longer. Yeah. Like, that's your answer, isn't it? It's like, they're not exciting games anymore.
So bad. Yeah. What do you think lacking from these games now?
No, everybody's afraid. Everybody's afraid to commit bodies forward.
No one wants to go for it,
I think. Chelsea were the better side. Chelsea were the better side, right? Okay, in this match. In a way that the stats say that. The stats say Chelsea were better. Man United are counter-attacking side, still, probably, to this day, are still a counter-attacking side under Ollie. So, like, kind of plays into their hands. And it just reeks of, it's a stench of fear and... Do you know what I mean? At a certain point, we need to remember that football is an entertainment. Yeah. It is entertainment, you know, and, you know, put £1 billion worth of players in a pitch and they just move around each other maybe it seems worse than it is because we have high expectations of top six clashes. I'm not sure. That might be my bias and an individual bias. I'm very aware. I don't know if that's...
I don't know. I think there's something in that, though. I mean, like, the reason why you have that is because the top six, you know, they're there. You know, you expect a good game when they're playing so well against everyone else. So
if you look at sort of from 2000 to probably about 2015, I mean, they were the games to watch for the reason of you're going to get two sides that it's two heavyweights, isn't it? Like boxing. Yeah. You're going to stand there and just give each other blows the entire game. You know, you just think back like Patrick Vieira, Roy Keane just scrapping in the middle of the pitch. You know, Henry dancing through the entire United defence and scoring. And you just think, oh, this is what it's made for. And now, like you say, Simon, we've got 22 players on the pitch just passing it back and forwards, and you're like, really? You're supposedly like these super athletes now, and you can't even be arsed by the looks of it.
I don't think it's they can't be arsed. I think the message is don't lose.
Don't lose the games. But I feel like in these games...
It's weird, isn't it? Especially United.
If a team in these games goes and attacks, then it's automatically at an advantage. Do you know what I mean? Because the other side aren't going to attack them because they know we can't lose. And it's like, well, we need to win, so we're going to go for it.
Mm. Definitely, but there's something to play for. I mean, you know, I think without fans to physically sort of like push them up the pitch at these big fixtures, maybe that's in it. But, you know, I'm not having it as an excuse. You know, it seems just too coincidental that every big six sort of fixture this season just seems to be a total underwhelming affair. The last one I properly enjoyed was probably Man City Tottenham. When Tottenham were, there was a story to it, you know, Tottenham were backs against the walls and Man City were just piling forward and Tottenham were just Jose Mourinho. And I mean, that was, even though like Tottenham clearly didn't have anywhere near the quality of players that Man City had, it was an interesting story and an interesting sort of tactical sort of approach by Jose Mourinho that was the only way he could get something for the match. And outside that, I don't think I've really properly enjoyed any top six fixture this season. Maybe even.
There's a reason why they're always on Sunday afternoons, isn't it? It's because you've had your Sunday dinner and you need something to fall asleep to.
A little nap.
Yeah. No, they don't keep you up anymore, these games, unfortunately.
Yeah. No, they're not worth watching anymore. Like this one, I said, you know, I watched 20 minutes of it and I was like, 0-0, turn it off. And lo and behold,
you went wrong.
You went wrong.
I was just kidding.
I turned it on in the 89th minute and they were like, oh, it's been a tactical battle. It's like, that's code for this has been shit. Sorry, swearing. Yeah. But
this has been shit. We have nothing to talk about. Yeah. Look at this handball. Moving swiftly on. For a bit of good news for us, I was again travelling during this match. So I didn't actually see it, I only seen the highlights. I was dreading this match. I messaged Joe Jake and I said, I am dreading this match. Because I've been on this podcast shitting on Sheffield United for about 6 months. And I was like, please don't fucking beat Liverpool, man.
Imagine. Oh, my God.
You wouldn't have seen me
for a long time. We wouldn't be sat here speaking now.
No. It'd be Jake sat where I am hosting this podcast. Jake, what were your thoughts in this match? You actually did watch this live.
I did. Like you, mate, to be honest, I was sort of dreading it. I was like, what sort of world are we living in?
Liverpool are dreading Sheffield United away.
The thing is, mate, it's been the story of the season where you think, oh, we're going to get 3 points out of this. And, you know, Brighton, West Brom, Newcastle, all these teams. And it's, you know, lost, draw. And you're thinking, oh, no. And then it's, you know, the side that you just think, if they lose to these, this is a disaster. But to be honest, for the first half, I mean, Aaron Ramsdale turned into Buffon.
He did.
It really bugged me because he's been dreadful all season and he couldn't catch a cold. And, you know, he's some of the saves that he pulled out. I was messaging my dad during the game and he was saying, you know, he's conceding like 9 goals in a normal game in this. But against us, like keepers just sort of turn up and pull out worldy performances. And I thought, this is just going to be one of those games where, like, Ollie McBurney, who's not scored all season, bags a header and wins it in the 89th minute. But I want to say Curtis Jones was unbelievable again.
He was excellent.
He's such a talent and he's so confident and that his finish was wonderful. Trent's desire to get that ball in was incredible. Really good finish. But yeah, Curtis Jones for me, standout player of Liverpool's season. He's come in, he's matured massively, and he's starting to dictate games and grab a hold of games and turn things around. But I also want to credit Nat Phillips again. I feel like Nat Phillips is not getting enough credit for how he's playing. He's the senior centre back. He's played less than 50 games in his top flight career. He's only 23. But he looked good again. He won every header, marshalled the defence really well. And, you know, for someone who's, a lot of people saying, you know, he's a bit of a throwback centre back, he'll just lump every ball forward and head everything. But to be honest, Liverpool need that at the minute. They need someone who will just win every single ball and just get rid of it because, you know, that's what's been letting Liverpool down. And I think Nat Phillips will be hard done by if he sort of dropped in the next couple of games because he deserves to keep his place in this team.
We spoke about this offline. I really wish we did save that conversation for the podcast because we spoke about Nat Phillips quite a lot. And yeah, the feel was that I'd never seen Nat Phillips come in and put in a bad performance. No. And I was thinking, and we were playing midfielders in his position, and granted, Jordan Henderson did a terrific job at, well, not a terrific job, he did a job at centre-back, right, and we missed Jordan Henderson in the midfield dictating the direction in which we were going to move the play. And that Phillips for me, yeah, he is a centre-back. The important thing for me is he's a centre-back, he's 23, like you said, Jake, he's more senior than Reece Williams, he's even more senior than...
Kabak.
Yeah, Kabak, and, you know, I want to see Nat Phillips on the pitch because we look a better size when he's there.
Yeah.
We just do. I don't know why, right? Granted, right, he's not cute with his feet, but man, when Jordan Henderson went off injured and Nat Phillips came on, we hadn't won a ball. We hadn't won an aerial duel until that happened. And, you know, I like that we can see, because normally we just used to Virgil van Dijk winning everything, just eating everything up. He could be like 50 metres from an aerial ball, then eat it up. You know, it's like, but we don't have that. And it's nice to see a centre back on the pitch, dictate, just winning a battle, you know, and then putting us back on the front foot.
Yeah.
Something we've lacked for a wee while. It's been far too easy to break into
Do you think he's going to potentially hold down a position in the squad, you know, when everyone's back to fitness?
No.
Do you see him still getting a game for Liverpool, or just coming in doing his bit now and then going?
No, I don't see him as a Jurgen Klopp player. There's a reason why Jurgen has favoured midfielders over him. Jurgen Klopp does like centre back specifically that can play with the ball at their feet. Joe Matip, very good with the ball at their feet. Virgil van Dijk, very, very good pass of the ball. Joe Gomez, you know, I dare you to find me, you know, a centre back that's a good deal better at passing the ball than Joe Gomez, or as athletic as Joe Gomez when he is fit. These are the kind of centre backs that Klopp likes with his snap. Phillips is, like Jay said, I will echo his points, a bit of throwback centre back. He's big and tall and strong, and he's going to stand up and bully whoever's near him. And you know, and for me, that's okay. I don't need we have so many players that are cute with the ball at their feet.
Yeah.
We probably don't need that Phillips to be there.
That's the thing, mate. That's the thing. Nat Phillips doesn't need to be cute with the ball with his feet. He wins the ball back. He gives it to Thiago, and he just says, "Right, you do it now." And I like that. You know, it's football at its simplest form when I see Nat Phillips play. It reminds me of just simple football. Just get the ball, give it to someone else who's better than you are. And, you know, that's not a bad thing. But Nat Phillips has come in and he's worked hard. He's not like, he's left every ounce of like sweat on the pitch and he's given it his all. And for someone that was, you know, on loan last season in the Bundesliga 2 and looked like he was on going to be on loan again, to come in and just, like, you know, knowing that he's not ever going to be a first choice centre back for Liverpool, to come in 100% commitment. I mean, it's a credit to him. I mean, what a talent! What a player to have in your squad. You know, that's for me that's desire. That's what Liverpool's all about, is getting a chance and sticking to it. And he's done that. And you know, he can say that he's played for Liverpool and he's put in a really good shift. And he's not put a foot wrong once since he's come into the side.
I would say enjoy him while he can, Jake, because I don't envision a long-term career at Liverpool for that.
No,
Phillips.
Neither do
Although
I.
Although I do envision now, if he could keep a space in the squad, which I think he should do, I really do think he should, and he's deserving that in his performances, and I don't think he should be dropped unless performances dip. It should warrant a good move to a solid club that he should be the starting centre-back in. I can 100% see that and envision that in his future. And, you know, when he does leave us, for him doing that job for us, I think many Liverpool fans will be very grateful for what he's done.
Maybe he's destined for a more season, just playing in FA Cup matches and then potentially games like, you know, Fulham away.
I think he'll want more. I think he'll want more. Personally, I do. Maybe we send him out on loan and we just kind of leave him out there until, you know, it's firefighter time. Then he gets a quick.
He's the big Sam of centre back.
To be fair, he had to do that the season before in the FA Cup.
Yep,
with Everton.
Where he was recalled, played, and then sent back out on loan.
He landed, played the game, and then went straight back to Stuttgart on loan again. It was brilliant. And do you know what? It was like after the game as well. He was like, "No, I'm made up. I've played for Liverpool, so I'm happy now." And then he flew back to Germany. It's good. You know, he's living every Liverpool fan's dream. So, I mean.
Yeah, of course he is. Of course he is. We next go to our final match of the podcast. We'll wrap this one up fairly quickly, boys, because we are running low in time. Everton managed to get the 3 points against Southampton. What were your thoughts?
Great finish from Richarlison.
Yeah. It's all about the pass from Sigurdsson, I think, that goal, though.
Beautiful. Oh, yeah. Great pass. But I think Southampton are in an absolute rut. They're like Wolves. You know, I think since they've beat Liverpool, they've lost 8 out of 9 or something ridiculous like that. And that is absolute relegation form. They're not going to get relegated, but, you know, they are only 7 points clear of the relegation zone, which seems quite a lot, but this crazy season, anything can happen. So they could very well be sucked into that, but I can't personally see it. But, you know, Ancelotti doing wonders again at Everton, another win.
Wins the match, he probably didn't deserve to, in my opinion. Southampton were, you know, they were good value for money in this. Everton grinding out the results, as you do, as top-class manager's going to get a side to do. I think, like you say, Richarlison's goal, is that little touch went outside of the right and then just passed the keeper, left him for dead, and it just talks at me loud. And do you know what? It's Richarlison, every time he scores, still looks angry at whatever's happened to him.
Do you mean Richarlison? Did you see that?
No, I was saying Richard Larson, son of Henrik Larson.
Oh, my bad.
Richard Larson.
Straight off the top of the head, that lad. You can keep that one. It was an okay fixture. I did watch the full 90 minutes. It went very much away. I didn't see Southampton getting the win here. I thought they could maybe squeeze a point. Obviously, Ancelotti had different ideas. Yeah. He set up the side very, very well. He's been very clever about how he's using his side, slipping in, you know, Mason Holgate and Ben Godfrey, and just using them, you know, across the back four, wherever it seems necessary. Ben Godfrey, I think, has played in every position in the back
I
four.
Think so, yeah.
He's played right back, left to centre back, right to centre back, and left back as well. So, you know, good for him just making himself undroppable. And I do hope he can nail down a place, because he does look a great, great talent, Ben Godfrey. And again, that midfield of, you know, Alan, Sigurdsson, Doucouré, Gomez, you know, finding a way. I don't mind them in this 4-4-2 shape.
Mm.
I do think they play their best football when they've got the strongest side and they can play that 4-3-3. I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah, I'd agree. My only thoughts on this game really are Everton deserved the win. That's about it. Like, they played better. I'm not really surprised. Like we say, Saints' form has been terrible recently. So I don't think even they were expecting to go there and beat Everton. The goal came from a moment of quality.
Really did.
And fair play. Move on to the next game for both teams, isn't it? It's like, job done for Everton. And for Southampton, it's, okay, we probably weren't going to win.
And they want it. They probably, like Wolves, they want the season to be over, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's really weird how their season's dropped off completely, hasn't it? It's like...
Everton's doing what good teams do, it, not playing well and picking up points. They did seem another day at the office for them, very much so. Yeah, credit to Ancelotti, who's been absolutely terrific for them. But we do have to finish it there, boys. We are out of time. Thank you very much for joining me, lads.
Thank you, mate. Always a pleasure to be back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you very much for the listeners. We will be back with another Jed's 11 show probably very soon. We've got another
news to Jed
as well. News to Jed, as I tell them.
It's all right. I know. It's all good.
Vaguely got it sorted. Vaguely has an idea what he's doing there, Jed. We will be ready to bring you our new big sponsorship and a nice wee code to get yourself some goodies very, very soon. Thank you very much.
Find more great shows or join the team at sport-social.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.